been on the war and we're back, driving about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for the things they believe in. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, our fighting men and walking side to me. If you don't love it, believe it, let this song that I was singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, believe it, let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country halls, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. With lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are...
How about a little bit of Mama Try?
European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and, of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, interesting day in some ways. I was watching, actually last night, I was watching TV, and this is an ad that's run on Canadian TV, and it features it promotes a wine, and the wine is Inniskillen. And Inniskillen is a wine that's produced in the Okanagan Valley, in the southern part of the Okanagan Valley, down around Oliver in British Columbia. Yeah, it's a reasonably good Canadian wine. Yeah, it's a winery, actually, not just one type of wine. Fair enough, and it tells us that for 40 years, it's been a wine that helps people get grow close. Okay, fair enough. Good idea. And there's a kind of a, there are several couples there that seem to be having had a evening together or a dinner, and they're prominent glasses of wine in their hands and they're smiling. And there's a fireplace, and then I guess the other couple leaves, leaving us with this particular couple. A grinning black woman and a white man, and they're about to sit, or they're sitting down on the couch, I guess, going to cuddle and so on. Well, I find that ad egregiously offensive for several reasons. First of all, the basic concept of the ad is good. Wine brings people close together. It's a good way to celebrate good times together. Fair enough, I get it. Good idea. I applaud it. Good strategy, I'd say. The problem is, why does it have to be a mixed race couple? What are they trying to say to us? Are they trying to make a special play for that tiny minority of white men who want to go with black women? Actually, it's usually in the opposite direction, some white women preferring to go with black men. I just totally disapprove, but what exactly is the message? And you know, this is not unique. I've mentioned these types of ads before. The major corporate Canada seems hell-bent on trying to create a reality, suggest a reality. Now, from a strict how do we move the product point of view, this is not a good idea. Actually, most of the ad is a good idea. Intimacy, couples together, warm firelight, good times brings people together. Yeah, that's a pretty good branding for the wine. I totally approve. Probably a good way to go about things. Where I have problems, though, is the sudden appearance of the interracial couple. For one thing, in terms of the demographics in Canada, mixed race couples are a tiny minority, probably well under 5%. So if you're trying to hit the broad demographics of people who are likely to buy the product, you're missing them with that. So as a corporate strategy, I've got to say they've got it wrong. But more than that, I find it offensive because I get the sneaky feeling they're preaching at me. That's what they're doing. They're trying to sell me something, and it's not the wine. No problem with the wine. I actually have no problem with the general approach to marketing it. You know, it's sort of what you might call the lifestyle approach, and that is the suggestion that if you have this wine, it will bring you closer together, or you know, enhance the lifestyle. Fair enough. I don't have a problem with that. I do have a problem with this preachiness. And you know what? I'm going to be complaining to the management. I'm going to say, I won't say necessarily respectfully, but I have otherwise a good impression of your product. Why do you want to muddy this up with this type of a couple? What you're suggesting to me somehow is that this is good or acceptable. So obviously, some people think it is. Many people do not think it's acceptable, and I'm one of them. And if this is just sort of John and Jane Doe, it isn't John and Jane Doe. This is a particular type of person. What do we have here? Here's another preachy one. Relationship roadblocks, my boyfriend's dad. Now this is he writes a column in the Globe and Mail once a week called Damage Control. David Eddy. David's going to tell us how to deal with various problems in life. Well, here's today's problem. I love my boyfriend deeply, but I love my boyfriend deeply, but lately I've been finding it increasingly difficult to spend time with his father, who makes racist, homophobic, and sexist comments during visits. His comments are extreme and insulting. Recently, we went to a restaurant and were seated near a Middle Eastern family. When they left, he couldn't stop talking about how he hates Muslims. I'm often the only one who speaks up and tells him his comments are inappropriate. Well, that's what she thinks. His comments are inappropriate. I have told him that his sexist comments are personally offensive, but it doesn't change anything. I've even told him his behavior will likely damage his relationship with his future grandchildren. This has led to arguments with my boyfriend, who doesn't want to get in between our arguments. I understand his need to defend his father, but I feel frustrated that he seems to tolerate his behavior. What do I do? Well, wait a sec. He can't tolerate his behavior. The man has an opinion. I'm probably on. And you know, these are kind of broad terms that were used, racist, homophobic, and sexist comments. We're not given any example of homophobic. You mean he doesn't approve like or approve of homosexuals? Well, I don't. A lot of people don't. Sexist. Well, you know, again, what does that mean? That there should be different, that there are naturally, biologically different roles for the sexes? I totally agree. That the sexes are unequal? Absolutely. That doesn't mean men are better than women or women are better than men. They're unequal. They are different. And racist. Well, again, no examples. And she's told him these his comments are inappropriate. What do you mean inappropriate? You mean she doesn't agree with them. So she's going to be the arbiter of who talks and who doesn't talk. I suspect he might well have problems with some of her views. We're not told what they are, but I have a pretty good idea. Imagine the nerve of this twit telling a person probably 20 or more years her senior that his comments are inappropriate. Fair enough to say I don't agree with you. But among adults, we should have every right to express our opinion and not have some pecksniff telling you that they don't agree with you. And the blackmail, or the implicit blackmail, that he might not be, they're not married yet, that is, she and the boyfriend, and they obviously don't have children, the implicit blackmail, this might damage their relationship, his relationship, or maybe even access to his own, this woman is a piece of work, and she's the one who's a fanatic. Anyway, so what to do? She hasn't been able to beat him down with her threats and comments. So what should we do, or what should? Well, anyway, what does David Eddy have to say? Well, he says here, what you've done so far is good, on point and right on the money, I'd say. If you read the literature on how to if you read the literature on this sort of thing, how to handle racist, sexist in-laws, relatives, and friends, the consensus tends to be one, be direct, and two, set consequences. Oh yeah, if you don't shut up, I'm going to do this. I think she's putting her poor boyfriend in a very difficult position. We don't know what the boyfriend's opinions are, but you go against your own father. I would say the relationship may not be heading in a very happy direction. And this reflects a narrow, constipated view of a neo-Stalinist society where certain opinions are simply not allowed. And then David Eddy goes on to compliment her further. That's the good news. You told your father-in-law off to his face and implied it might have an impact on access to his unborn grandchildren. Wow. Wow. Amazing. Hello? 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 So, goes on to say, he goes on, this is the advice giver, David Eddy. What is this mania to opine, air prejudices, when one is not, in fact, a paid pundit? As with any human being, he has a right to an opinion, and a right to state his opinion. In day-to-day social interaction, if someone doesn't agree with my point of view on a particular topic, I say, fine. It's not as if the Pentagon is calling for my opinion on North Korea. very witty, but your campaign does not seem to have had much of an effect on your father-in-law as so far. He goes on to say you can either grit your teeth and just listen to it or escalate. Try to get your boyfriend, I'm summarizing, but get your boyfriend involved and try to get him to pressure and so on. It's actually the advice is somewhat vague, but what I find disturbing is that this opinionated woman, and of course she's got a right to her opinion, absolutely, but feels compelled to want to silence her prospective father-in-law. Because he has opinions she doesn't agree with, or that she deems to be racist, sexist, or homophobic. Now, those are terms of abuse, terms of demonization, and they're usually not very well defined. What is racist? I don't want my country overrun by the third world. Is that racist? Because it recognizes that race is an issue? I don't think it is. I think it's just basic human nature. That would be said whether you're a Chinaman in China, a Japanese in Japan, a Turk in Turkey, a South Sea Islander. You don't want your country radically changed by an invasion of foreigners. That's human nature. Nothing weird about that. And so on. But I find this guy is a leftist, this David Eddy. I occasionally read his column, and I'm not surprised by his advice, but I think there's a distinct lack of humility on the part of that woman. And she's much younger than the fellow, and just because he's older doesn't mean he's wise. I'd be the first to acknowledge that. But she would feel free to order him about, basically shut up, or I'll deny you access to the grandchildren. Talk about who's the fanatic here. What it says is there's only one correct opinion, the politically correct opinion, my way or the highway. This is really, as I wrote here, as I read the today in the coffee shop, this is really just neo-Stalinism. Here's a woman getting some nice press from Richard Ogier. Merkel shows the rest of the world how to be a true leader. Oh yeah, do tell us. With Germany facing elections on September 24th, here's a clue to the nation as it is, how it's traveling, adapting, its fit in the world when the most powerful and oldest democracies, the United States and Britain, have taken a resolutely populist turn. With a 13 to 17% point lead in the opinion polls, hello? Telling you these endless calls. This is from American Express telling me I have a good credit rating with them. I'm glad to hear it. Problem is I don't have an American Express credit card. Well, let's not be too nasty to them. Anyway, it says that Merkel has a 13 to 17% lead in the opinion polls. And she's the one who opened the national borders to a staggering 1 million refugees. Looks as if she'll be reelected to a fourth consecutive term. I would say it might be true. It might be. On the other hand, it might keep an eye out for surprises. The British election in May was supposed to be a walkaway with newly appointed party leader Theresa May, cleaning up against a discredited Labor Party with a leader that even most of the caucus had wanted gone and had rejected. And yet, he came quite close. Anyway, well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see what actually happens. Miss Merkel had the grit, moral integrity, and as it turned out, staying power to face down Europe's biggest humanitarian crisis since the fall of the Berlin Wall. She waved 20,000 mostly Syrian refugees through to Munich Central Station in a single weekend in September 2015. That's as many as then British Prime Minister David Cameron agreed eventually to take in over 5 years. Another 980,000 refugees would continue to stream into Germany through 2015 and 2016. A million people. An invasion. Now, of course, this writer praises her as for grit, moral integrity. Moral integrity. Betraying her own people. Replacing her own people. Oh boy, now there's a moral paragon. Many of the desperate millions came from war-torn Afghanistan and Iraq. It goes on to Syria. Well, this is and the writer goes on to ask, have levels of cynicism reached such heights that acts of integrity are distorted and eventually minimized? An act of integrity without consulting your own people to bring in a million people, million very needy people who will be taxing the welfare and education systems for many, many years? That's integrity. No, that verges on criminality, in my opinion. Have levels of cynicism reached such heights, the author asks, that acts of integrity are distorted and eventually minimized. It was the so-called Balkan route closed, and thousands of people gathered on a platform at the Budapest Keleti railway station after a Syrian Alan Kurdi's three-year-old body washed up on the Turkish beach, after 71 refugees were found dead from asphyxia in the back of a refrigerator truck near the Austrian-German border, that Mrs. Merkel led the purportedly timid, that Mrs. Merkel, the purportedly timid, the heartless dominatrix of the great debt crisis, waved through the thousands. Now, that's very odd, you know. It was pointed later on in the article, it will say that the cost thus far has been 20 billion euros, which would be nearly 30 million, a billion Canadian dollars. And it was pointed out to me earlier today, and I agree with the person who did this, that money could have been spent within the European Union. It could have been spent to ease the debt of Turkey, of Greece, and to a lesser extent Spain. And Merkel had been so heartless in dealing with the improvident Greeks. The one difference being, the European Union is supposed to be a union, theoretically, where the various countries will take care of one another. Instead, this fortune in income, in spending, goes to the benefit of people who are not members of the European Union, to complete foreigners. Pusillanimous, that means cowardly, critics said that she opened her arms to compensate for Germany's falling birth rate, being the mere puppet of German business, as if compassion and pragmatism couldn't sit side by side at the crux of any political reckoning. There's no pragmatism here. This is a repeated argument we hear on both sides of the Atlantic, a low birth rate and potential labor shortage. Always listen to potential. Germany has 6% unemployment. There is no labor shortage. It may have a low birth rate. That may be a problem in the future. Do you deal with that by bringing in radically different foreigners who may or may not be able to work? Many of these people will probably be welfare parasites for a generation or more. As the labor shortage is not today, why not a proposal where you encourage German couples to have children? And then in 15 years' time, or well, actually 18 years' time, there is your slightly increased workforce. Why would you bring in people today, the least qualified people, to act as a workforce at some point in the future for jobs that we may not be able to, we're not even sure that will exist? And that's one of the problems with the labor projections. Technology and the economy are changing so fast that it's almost impossible to predict exactly what jobs will be in demand or what skills will be in demand 10 years out, let alone 15, 20, or 25. So to say there might be a labor shortage in the future is basically to say nothing. You really don't know. To make long-range decisions based on a shortage that may never occur is just madness. Some critics were trying to find some rational reason other than hatred of the German people that could motivate Merkel. She goes on to say, alongside Mrs. Merkel's decision has been the gargantuan effort of the German population. 20 billion euros of taxpayers' funds were spent on refugees in 2016 alone. 325,000 refugee children are being integrated into German schools. Well, no, they've been accepted in German schools. They've gone to German schools. Have they been integrated? There's a lot of evidence that many of these students haven't fit in at all. In fact, where they have the force of numbers, they've assaulted German children. Young German girls are told to dress more modestly so as not to turn on or offend the invaders. No. Integrated, if it meant seamlessly fit in, not the case at all. There's been widespread violence by some of these refugees, so-called refugees, against Germans, particularly German women. Mass rapes, in some cases murders. And then there's some speculation as to how the election will turn out. Well, no point belaboring that. I guess we'll just see. Germany, with Canada and Sweden, will redress their labor force imbalances, reverse the declining birth rate, and pay for their pension systems. Those prepared to hear the cry of the weak in the long night of the Middle East will turn things around and turn out to be out front and winners. Well, this is the most egregious pie in the sky imaginable. Canada, Germany, and Sweden, who've been generous and taken in scads of these opportunists and refugees and wanderers, will have redressed their labor force imbalance. But the labor force is not in out of balance in Canada. We have over 6% unemployment. So does Germany. There is no imbalance in the labor force, and these people, many of whom do not speak English, in the case of Germany, they do not speak German, will not easily find jobs where there are few jobs to be found. That's the reality, okay. Reverse the declining birth rate. What you're doing is basically replacing your people with others. Oh, that's a good idea, isn't it? Well, I don't think so. And what else? Oh, and paid for our pension systems. So, benevolence, humanitarianism, will pay off big. Well, racial replacement and genocide on the installment plan of your own people will lead to nothing but a disaster. But anyway, this author certainly seemed to think it was a rattling good thing that was done. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to take a short musical interlude, and I'd like to play a song that played a couple times before, and it's sent to me by a friend of mine named Jay in Queensland and in Australia. And this is a great song. He bills it as the new Australian national anthem. It's witty and so typical of Australians. Very in your face, honest, to the point. And this is what he calls the new Australian anthem. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. True Blue Australia.
Well, I'm a true blue Aussie and a dinky dog. Love me country and I love this life. I love me missus and the kids as well. And I hate to say but it's gone to hell. The politicians want to sell our land to anyone who with cap in hand. And let them take our Aussie jobs, fill her up with foreign mobs. I swear, true blue Australian mate. Yeah, we're dinky dog. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over this land. Well, our top and trolley's been hijacked with all that bloody hell crap. My bugger county cat can tell, he's turned into a Muslim now. So let them pay for what they use and plainly label our boots. It's bad enough to cop this shit, but the buggers make us pay for it. We're true blue Australia, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dog. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over this land. But if you want to join us living here, let us make it bloody clear. Respect our home as well our law, or else you'll soon be shown the door. Polygamy is not our way, or forcing women to obey. One special thing I've got to say, marrying kids is not okay. We're true blue Australian, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dog. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over the land. There's one more thing you gotta know, to all you knobs who run the show. Think we'll take this lion down? Well, think again, you clowns. We're true blue Australian, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dog. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over the land. We're true blue Australian, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dog. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over the land. And if you don't like it, you can kick off.
I think that's a great song there. I hope you like it too. Also want to thank Jay for sending it my way. I think really really encouraging to hear people praising and stating what their country's about. You know, we have far too many people who don't stand up, and we've really been crushed by their passivity, and passivity just doesn't work out well. One man who's never been passive was Merle Haggard, and this is a great song of his. It's called America First. Merle Haggard, America First. Again, a song by a man I played a few times before, and getting a lot of good comments about this fellow. He records under the name Rebel Son, and this is Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee, Confederate Son.
And the barn is gone. Now the tower is turned and the problem lies. Too much fat, not wood.
Taking a trip in my old Chevy, riding through the south. I looked up on a hill and I saw a big white house. I caught a glimpse of a bearded man polishing his sword. Well, I saw Robert E. Lee outside, sitting on the porch. I pulled up in the yard and saw a cotton field out back. He invited me to sit with him and share a fifth of Jack. He had crisscross bars and 13 stars blowing in the wind. He said, save your Confederate money, boy, cause the South will rise again. And Robert E. Lee did not like the Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. We talked about his troops in the rebel infantry and those 13 southern states that live in infamy. As he took another swig of his black label whiskey, he said that Yankee pride don't mean a damn thing to me. He spoke about his men and how they always fought so brave, and how they wove their sacred flag, though many lives they gave. He struggled to gain independence for his southern ground. He stood up for his cause and never once did he back down. And Robert E. Lee did not like them northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink 'em up.
And that's I've been up, staying up drinking with Robert E. Lee, and this is by Dominoes. The new singer I've been playing, and I hope you like him. This is sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee with Confederate with Rebel Boy, and I am just trying to find this there we are. Okay, we're gonna play one more tune by Rebel Boy, and this was Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee.
And, here's to the plumbers who fix things we can.
And this is Bury Me in Southern Ground. Actually, this is called Quit Your Bitching.
There's snot-nosed people everywhere worldwide. There ain't nobody nowhere ever satisfied. So they bitch, bitch, bitch every single day. If they weren't bitching, they'd have nothing to say. Everybody's busy bitching about everything. All day long, 7 days a week. I bet you're even in the bed bitching in your sleep. Bitch, 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 what you bitching about? Bitch, 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 why don't you shut your mouth? Bitch, 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 so you might as well just quit your bitching and go to hell. Why don't you eat shit and go fuck yourself? Snotty-ass people everywhere I go. They're all bitching about somebody they don't even know. Bitch, 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 that's all you ever do. I bet behind your back somebody bitching about you. Bitch, 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 what you bitching about? Bitch, 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 why won't you shut your mouth? Bitch, 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 so you might as well just quit your bitching and go to hell. Why don't you eat shit and go fuck yourself. All you do is bitch and you can't seem to quit. You know you're not supposed to talk with a mouth full of shit. Bitch, 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 we've all heard enough. Why don't you mind your own business and shut the fuck up? Bitch, 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 what you bitching about? Bitch, 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 why don't you shut your mouth? You bitch, 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 so you might as well just quit your bitching and go to hell. Why don't you eat shit and go fuck yourself? Why don't you quit your bitching and go to hell? Why don't you eat shit and go fuck yourself?
Well, that's by Rebel Sun. Kind of a bit racy there, I think. As Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Here's another thing I picked up today from my trusty local paper, the Ronan Whale, the Globe and Mail. And it says here, conservative Catholics, listen to Jesus, love thy neighbor. Well, apparently there's a new book out by a Jesuit named Reverend James Martin. The book is called Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. Well, how do you do that if practicing homosexuals as opposed to people who just have the inclination, but practicing homosexuals? The practice of homosexuality is considered by the Catholic Church and by traditional Christians to be a sin. To have the temptation or to have the orientation or desire for homosexuality or lesbianism, as the case might be, it traditionally is not the sin. It's the actual practice of it that's a sin. Relationship of respect, compassion, and sensitivity. These are kind of weasel words. Well, there's been quite a controversy about the book, and a lot of in the social media, a lot of traditional Catholics, or conservative Catholics, have reacted quite strongly against this. Now, what the reviewer or columnist says, he's a graduate student. His name is Brandon Ambrosino. He's a freelance writer from Delaware, and he's written for the New York Times, the Boston Globe, the BBC, and The Economist. But anyway, says that, well, the first rule or the first commandment is love. That's what we must love our neighbor. That may well be, but that doesn't mean you have to condone your neighbor. Or show respect for what you don't believe. And he goes on to say, when somebody comes out strongly in favor of homosexuality, I often say, and I wonder if he's got a dog in this race. Well, he does. I'm a baptized Catholic, he says, and engaged to be married to a man. Oh, well, good for you. But you can't do that in the Catholic Church. You can't do that as a practicing Christian, as a biblical Christian. You know, you might live with a guy, you may divide up tasks.
His husband, okay. Well, you may do the cooking and the dusting and the cleaning, and he'll go out and earn a living.
That may be a perfectly acceptable relationship, but you're not married. Anyway, so what can one do with such deluded people? Should there be a respectful relationship? I don't think it's proper to want to hurt these people. But how can you respect what, as in point of fact, you don't respect? And I would argue that you can't. They will try to suggest that anyway, I'm sure. So, okay, he goes on to say, Father Martin told me during our interview, he interviewed him, that I'm as welcome in the church as the Pope or any angry tweeting Catholic. In a time when resisting has become about loud and public demonstrations, I found my own quiet way of resisting homophobia in the Catholic, in the church, simply by showing up with my soon-to-be husband, smiling and participating in the body of Christ. Well, according to traditional Catholic theology, and this would be true of most Protestant denominations as well, it's only his fantasy or neuroses that this is his soon-to-be husband. He may be a housemaid, he may be a number of other things, he's not a husband. And traditionally, it's not the temptation you have that would exclude you from the church, the homosexuals would be welcome in the church as well. The only thing that would exclude you would be the actions. So he says he wants to counter homophobia in the church. Well, that's simply what he's referring to is the church is teaching that the practice of homosexuality is wrong. He goes on to say, I've learned that the most effective answer to "but you can't be a gay Christian" is this: watch me. I encourage all my Catholic LGBT brothers and sisters to join this peaceful resistance. And then he says, oh, well, there are a couple of these isolated passages in the Bible. But the first law is love. Well, there are actually pretty definitive passages. And they're from the New Testament as well. Suggesting that the practice of homosexuality is a mortal sin. To lie with a man as with a woman is an abomination. Now, it's pretty hard to square the circle. He talks, as so many of the people do when they try to weasel around this issue, that he's looking for a careful, nuanced interpretation. You mean just basically ignore what the Bible says? Well, you can do that, of course. But then don't call yourself a Catholic. You know, you're free to do that, but you can't be both. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show's repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, all of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever.
Providing forensic, we have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hey guys, looks like George is having some trouble connecting, if he's available or not, I don't know.
Okay. All right, well, we'll stay tuned.
I'm here.
Good deal, Paul.
All right, here we go.
Market's down and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn.
Welcome to the show, folks. You are tuned into the Trump phenomenon here on September 18th, 2017, getting closer and closer to that date of 2041, frequently mentioned by co-host Paul Fromm. Paul, let's see, how many years are we away? 2041, that's the tipping point, even projected by the government, where we will be a minority population in our own population here in America.
24 years, it's scary.
24 years, that's you and I will be around for that. and maybe, well, if we eat right and live right. So the, and what's the tipping point year in Canada?
Well, traditionally it's 2050, but those figures are more than a decade out of date. And they were based on the then immigration levels of about 200,000 a year. It's now over 300,000. The ratio remains the same, about 85% from the third world. So my guess is around 2045, 2046. So you know what? It's not the vague, distant future. And the scary thing is how far both our countries have fallen so fast. I like to use 1960 or 61 as kind of a comparison date. In 1961, Canada was 96% white. You needed a search warrant to find a Negro in Toronto. There were a very small number of Chinese, virtually no Arabs, and so on. So we were essentially, with the exception of the Indians and Eskimos, an all-white country. In 1960-61, the United States was 90% white, and almost all of the remaining 10% were Negroes. Hardly any Orientals, virtually no Arabs, and so on. Now, we have declined, so that today we've gone from 96 or better to 78% white. The United States has gone from 90% to about 61%. And our percentage of the population is falling, and we're going to hit the point where we will be a minority before the middle of this century. What a curse to leave to our children and grandchildren. You know, this is what really seriously bothers me.
Yes, in fact, I'm going to go to a website now, folks, that you should all be looking at now and again, and have it marked in your bookmarks, numbersusa.org, and let me go to, let me see if he's, numbersusa.com, it's good, he's upgraded to .com. This is Roy Beck's website, numbersusa.com, and he is the man most likely to get the numbers right. So I will study up today at numbersusa.com and see what tipping point years Beck is projecting. But he has made a real, and you know, this is the guy, Paul, that we need to walk from his office in Washington over to the White House and over to the House and Senate office buildings and give seminars. This would be wonderful. If Steve Bannon were still in the West Wing, Steve Bannon could lead a seminar with Roy Beck actually leading it. And he could, a very important part, folks, of getting people to adopt correct policy on immigration is they've got to know, they've got to understand the statistical nature of the problem. Or let's see, that's the wrong phrase, statistical nature. They've got to know how numbers work. And that's why Roy Beck chose the name numbersusa.com. Because if you don't understand how immigration numbers add up, the exponential quality, you could make some very naive, ill-informed choices. And this is something we're considering right now. If Donald Trump is in any way contemplating that maybe the DACA kids, maybe this group is, how did that word come out of my mouth? Kids. They're not kids. The average age is 25 and older. If the DACA people are yet again the latest group that is let through the gate with ever the promise that it's the next one. It's the next group that we'll exclude. Not this one. It's the next time. Well, folks, where have we seen that in life? It's the next time. You know, I'll stop drinking next time.
That's right.
I love the person who says, I quit smoking. And they said, oh, well, congratulations. Well, I quit about every hour I quit smoking. Yeah. And then I start again.
Yeah. And at some point, one has to draw the line. Or actually, the line never gets drawn.
Yeah, if you quit drinking every time and you quit smoking every time with every cigarette and every drink, of course you haven't quit, and we've got to quit letting ourselves be flooded with third worlders.
Yeah,
and that means at some point you have to actually say, all right, this is it. You know, you have to throw the cigarettes into the ocean. You have to pour the whiskey down the drain, and that's it. This is it. I don't mean to. Any of you out there enjoying a fine whiskey? I'm sorry. This is much more important, isn't it? The immigration, because this is life or death for all of us forever. And so, at some point, you have to say to a group, "No, this is the one. This is the one that we're actually going to send back." Have we ever? Now, let's say in recent times, Dwight D. Eisenhower did send back a number, as many as a million. Mexican farm workers in what he called Operation Bracero. No, Operation Wetback, excuse me. I got the name wrong. Operation Wetback. But that's the last time I know of that there was actually a return of people. This becomes incredibly important symbolically, emotionally, psychologically, that you return some people. If you don't, if you fold one more time, now this is why Breitbart, this is very interesting, Paul. Steve Bannon is doing something over at Breitbart that's, I'll tell you what, he's got a strategy going. He allowed to go out on Breitbart the phrase Amnesty Dawn. Now, that's, whoo-wee, that's quite a call there for the editor of Breitbart, the CEO. And that was obviously intended to get our man's attention. That, you know, you don't want to do this. You don't want to see that name in print. You don't want to be like Amnesty Bush 1, Amnesty Bush 2, Amnesty Clinton, Amnesty Obama, Amnesty Reagan. Did Jimmy Carter do some amnesty? Probably did. He certainly inherited amnesty. So the... you don't want that. And Ann Coulter also punching hard with her that essay that we read here on the air, where she says, or you will go down in history as the man who killed America. Oh my gosh, that's such a powerful phrase, Paul. It's stuck in my head.
Yeah,
it's so simple and powerful. So that's designed to get Donald Trump's attention. And let me connect it with the original idea concerning Roy Beck. It may be, Donald Trump has not made a study, as far as we know, a detailed study of the facts of immigration, as far as we know. He may have some naive spots there in his understanding of how immigration works. For instance, he's mentioned, he has said that it's DACA. One of his tweets was, it's DACA, not amnesty. Well, there's a misunderstanding there. Because DACA is amnesty. Anything that allows people to stay in your country is amnesty.
Yeah, the problem with amnesty is that given the present situation, it will only encourage more. If the present lot are allowed to stay, more will troop up from Central America and other trouble spots around the world. And although they'll be illegal at first, they will take courage encouragement from the fact that the previous invaders, in the end, they got to stay, or most of them got to stay and got regularized. So they're going to play the odds. And as long as America's living standard is considerably better than the places some of these people come from, they'll continue to come. The only way to reverse the or to stop that flow is to have as poor an economy as Haiti or the Ivory Coast. Well, I don't think that that's the direction we want to go in. We have to control our borders, and And you know, there are times when you have to say no. I mean, anybody who's a parent, you know, has probably at times broken their heart to have to say no to their child for something that the child doesn't, you know, thinks is good, and may even in fact be good, but may not be good for them at that point. Yes. And you don't want to have to say no. We always want to be a good guy, but sometimes you have to. Now, on an individual basis, some of these dreamers may be okay people, and it's too bad. But to let them stay is basically to invite another wave. And of course, as a commentator whose his name I did not get last week, but he was very powerful, and he was saying, but what about our children? We're told to do the big boo-hoo-hoo for the dream kids, but what about our kids who are unemployed, or what about our kids who have trouble getting into college, and so on? You know, it's a matter of putting our people first.
Yes. Now, here's the if you go on, you know, it's been a little while. Shame on me. It's been a little while since I have read on numbersusa.com, and my gosh. Has Roy Beck upgraded his website and his organization. It's wonderful. And folks, let me tell you how effective he is. Several failed efforts at amnesty recently were stopped. And those people foremost among the folks who stopped those amnesty attempts is Roy Beck. Roy Beck has a machine going that generates a flood of emails, of paper letters, of you name it, into congressional offices. And he's tracking everybody in the Senate and the House. So let's connect this with something we're very interested in this week, which is Donald Trump's upcoming Patriot rally in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm going to check on the status of that in just a moment. But the putative theme of the rally will be support for Luther Strange as senator, our next senator from Alabama, to replace the wonderful Jeff Sessions, who was a regular A-plus scorer on Roy Beck's report card. Now, this is a nice thing. You know, I remember back when we were in the John Birch Society, Paul, we had a wonderful thing that called the Conservative Index. And what that was is that the John Birch Society kept very close tabs on every congressman and senator and gave them scores from 0 to 100. And I remember our heroes used to be